Hello everyone, I'm Suruchi, and today we'll be discussing an extremely relevant topic of managing project teams and resources, which for each one of you who want to tomorrow be in supervisory roles, want to positively contribute as part of a large organization, is going to be very, very important, because you'll realize that more than technical awareness, more than knowledge, more than your degrees and qualifications, more than your work capabilities, one of the biggest factors which is going to define your success and your career growth is going to be how you manage people. And more interestingly, as I will state moving on, when it comes to managing people, there is no defined formula. You cannot get a degree and say, yes, I am now proficient and this is a guarantee that I will sure shot manage people in a very, very successful way, because people are complex. There are interpersonal dynamics, there are personality issues, there are capability issues, there are various other dynamics and equations that come into the place, there are morale issues, and you as a project manager have to be on top of that, have to be sensitive to all of that. It is not an art that you can be born with. It is not like an IQ that you are born with. It is something that you can develop over a period of time. So it is more of your emotional intelligence rather than your IQ, which is going to help you to be sensitive to how to effectively manage your teams and your resources to take any project and manage any project in a successful manner. So keep in mind that managing people is more of an art, an acquired art, which you can develop, rather than a science or a predefined formula that organizations are machineries. You fit in people into various roles and it's a well-oiled machine and it always gives you a desired outcome. That's not the way it works. You have to manage these people sensitively to get the best possible desired outcome. It is not an automated machine which is going to work exactly the way you want it to work by you just fitting in bricks into various slots. That's not the way organizations, people, and resources work. So there is a personal style and a commitment. So you may have been a very different person in college, and your colleague may have been a very different person in college, but depending on how sensitive you are and how open you are to acquiring this out of developing people, there is nothing to say that just because your colleague got higher marks than you or a better degree than you in college, he will be better at managing people. So again, as I said, it is not directly connected to your IQ. It is acquired, and you can excel much more than perhaps someone else who may have an academically better track record even than you to manage people much better. So it depends a lot on your personal style and how sensitively you can work towards knowing this art. If we were to quote one of the greatest football coaches, which is Vince Lombardi, he said the achievement of any organization are the result of the combined effort of each player. So think of any successful organization, whether it's a Wipro with Azim Premji, whether it's an Apple with the late Steve Jobs, whether it is your Team India with Mahendra Singh Dhoni or Sachin Tendulkar or Virat Kohli at the helm. Anywhere you will realize that whenever there is a successful organization, it's not just that the organization continued to perform successfully regardless of who the people were. One of the biggest things you will always catch on is so-and-so took it to a position of success. So-and-so's charisma took it to a position of success. So-and-so inspired his team member. So-and-so led his team members to success. So-and-so got the best out of his team members. So, for example, when we talk about Stephen Fleming, your New Zealand cricket player, he is said to be not one of the best cricket players in terms of individual cricket capability, but he is said to be one of the best people managers, and hence when he was the team captain of New Zealand, then he got the best out of the New Zealand players, cricket players. So it is a team effort, and it is the effort of each player and for a project manager, it becomes imperative to be that project manager who gets the best out of each of his players. And there is no formula that just because you're made supervisor, by default, you will get the best out of your players. You could have a completely demotivated and dissatisfied team not performing at all. So you have to perform as a project manager, but it becomes your responsibility to get that outcome out of each individual player as well. Continuing with our mantras for being a successful project manager, in this module, we are going to study a few guidelines. Again, this is not exhaustive. It is putting you in the right direction, showing you the right direction. You have to keep studying, evolving, observing. This is not exhaustive, but it will still endeavor to give you some basic things, which if you read the interview or hear the talks of any successful project managers or team managers in any field of life across the world, across the globe, you will see that there are certain mantras which are common across. There are certain ways that these team leaders have worked, certain mantras they have used, which have always got the best out of their team members. And these few mantras are absolutely common across these people, which are imperative to the foundation of any project manager. So the endeavor of this discussion and the next few chapters and modules is going to be to push you in that direction of knowing those mantras, which can form a good foundation for you to keep developing on. So keep in mind that an organization is an ongoing entity. So think of an HDFC bank. An HDFC bank has been in existence for decades. It is an ongoing entity. Every day there will be banking operations. Every day there will be various other banking services they will provide, and it will continue. When we talk specifically about a project, keep in mind that a project is temporary in nature. So for example, if HDFC Bank comes up with a project that we want to do the social awareness project, where we want to go to these C categories or rural area centers and create awareness about financial literacy there, or conduct some sort of drive where we are creating some good for those communities. Now, this could be an ongoing endeavor, but it could also be a time-bound project. So keep in mind that projects are temporary and do not last forever, whereas operations of an organization always do. Operations are day-to-day tasks, and they are the business focus and purpose of the organizations. Projects usually have a fixed outcome, a start point and an end point, and are subsets of a whole organization. So that is what we are going to be focusing on, your projects versus organizations. For example, when I was working for an MNC bank, there was a time when the MNC bank had been mandated to mobilize funds from the NRI community. Now there was no dedicated department or team, and these funds had to be mobilized from the NRI community over the period of the next 45 days, over and above the other services that the bank was offering. So they pulled in about 20 of us from different departments, made a task force, and for the next 45 days, in addition to whatever else we were doing, whatever our other roles were, our priority for the next 45 days became traveling to these various countries where the NRI community was large and had deep purses, reach out to them, fulfill all the regulatory requirements, and get them to invest and mobilize funds for this specific project. After these 45 days were over, the project successfully closed. We all indulged in a lot of roles and responsibilities that were not part of our regular roles and ongoing responsibilities, but were our responsibilities as members of this 45-day task force. We did that, and then after the 45 days, we switched off from this completed task and went back to our regular roles and responsibilities. So what I was doing as a regular employee was my organizational day-to-day business operations. What I did for those 45 days was work on a project as part of a specific task force with a start point and a short-term end point and a very specific outcome in that time frame. So we will be focusing on projects rather than ongoing organizational activities. These are unique endeavors and they do not fit into the day-to-day or normal activity. So as I mentioned to you, for those 45 days, our task force moved out of the regular day-to-day operations of the bank. Maybe there was a little bit of involvement, but our focus was tapping into these NRIs and bringing in their money. Now, these NRIs were not part of the regular banking operations of the bank. We did not on a regular basis reach out to them. But as part of this endeavor, we created this unique product or service which the bank was mandated to offer to these NRIs. And we had a project which was a planned activity, and it had a definite start and an end, that we need to mobilize X amount of funds by this date in October 2010 or October 2005, whichever year it was done in. So it had a very, very specific and unique assignment to it prior to that project, and after the end of the project, we never worked on that, and it did not become part of the regular business operations over and above that time-bound project. And a typical characteristic of a project is work is carried out in several phases. So as I told you, over those 45 days, we had a phase where the team, the task force, was being briefed about it, where we were in touch with the regulators, we were in touch with the various other entities who had mandated it. There was a planning formation of how, which countries we would target, where would we go, what is the minimum amount we would try to mobilize from each investor, and how would we go about it, who would go where. Next phase was us actually landing in those various countries, reaching out to the NRIs. Another phase was reporting back, constantly reporting back to our team center and whoever the head of this task force was, of where we stood. Next phase was when the money started trickling in, to make sure that all the documentation and everything went properly. Another final phase was closing it, coming back and making sure that everything was properly recorded, put in place, and the operational aspect of it was done properly. So there were, even within a short span of those 45 days, there were several phases in which different responsibilities and roles were carried out in these non-routine tasks. And you can look at one of the definitions of a project as a temporary endeavor undertaken to create a unique product or service, which is exactly what our task force and our NRI offering was all about. And examples are change in structure, staffing, style of an organization. So, for example, that new mandate of NRI product created a new aspect to the general structure of the bank, where the bank may not have offered that product beyond those 45 days on an ongoing basis, but it also added an additional dimension to what the bank was offering, and it developed a new something new. So one of the examples could be developing new or modified information system and constructing new building or infrastructure. So as you can see from these examples, projects can pertain to governments, industry, manufacturing, construction, financial services. There is nothing like a certain industry resorts to project management more and a certain industry does not. I will give you examples of companies right from Sainsbury's to Walmart to Apple to Microsoft across the globe. So as you will see, they are from different industries, and I will give you these examples to again highlight how project management does not pertain to any specific industry or people type. It can even be part of a social enterprise where there is no profit involved. So project management pertains to practically every aspect which involves any productive, meaningful work. Few more examples could be creating new businesses, processes or services. So as I mentioned to you, the examples can be absolutely exhaustive in terms of what a project could constitute. So if we are talking projects, we started out by talking about management of people. The success of a project or a task force will not happen unless there is effective team management. So when I gave you that example of the task force at the bank, there was, while there were 20 people whose key responsibilities were not this NRI money mobilization, now we were part of this task force. Since it had not existed in the past, there was no head of the department hierarchy. everyone was working sort of in a flat structure. But having said that, there needs to be accountability and someone needs to go back to the boss in the bank, the ultimate boss in the bank, and keep them updated about the eventual outcome and the ongoing processes as well. So for that time period of 45 days, out of these 20 people, two people were designated as the team heads to manage this team. So it was their business to ensure that the other 18 people managed to do the work effectively and produce results over the next 45 days. So it was there. If the team had failed, accountability and responsibility would have also fallen on the shoulders of the team managers. So your projects cannot be successful without effective team management. There is a strong sense of accountability and a strong sense of contribution required from each individual person. So the team management concept has been borrowed from sports terminology, where all members of teams strive together for a common goal. And individual strength and commitment of each member is very essential to function as a team. So for example, when your task force was formed for this MNC bank, and I mentioned that we went to several countries to tap into the NRI population, then having said that, don't you think some amount of intelligence would have gone into if someone has an exposure to the Middle East because of family reasons or prior work reasons, then let's send this specific person to the Middle East to take care of this project. So obviously individual strength and commitments become very essential, and those utilized in the best possible way and managed in the best possible way will give you the best outcome. But individual contributions make or break a team success. So look at any cricket team. You have your fast bowlers, you have your batsmen, and they have their various roles to play. You will not see that the ones who are the superstars are the ones who are generalists doing everything all the time. There are individual strengths which will stand out, which need to be harnessed to the best in the best possible way. Now, take a look at the software project you have been associated with. Think about the factors that make the project successful. Was it because of the effort of one person or project manager alone? No. Everyone would have contributed. So the creation of an iPhone would have been everyone, right from the your programmers to the people who marketed the product, to the people who designed what the iPhone will physically look like, who may have had nothing to do with the actual software system and the operating system inside that. So it is everyone's contribution. Just Steve Jobs having an idea would not have led to great products. Just a Bill Gates having ideas would not have led to great products if he did not have a proper and effective team in place to execute them. It was likely that it was because of combined effort of the team managerial success and is primarily built upon accomplishments of subordinates. So do you think Bill Gates goes into his office and does all the tasks start to finish every day? No, he's got a team of lakhs and lakhs of people sitting across the globe doing that. If they are not performing effectively, all of them being his subordinates, then he may not be able to deliver what he's delivering. So as a result, successful managers are in a way dependent on team members who are motivated. So if I have a team, if I am a sales head of an organization, of a private bank, and I have a team of people who are demotivated and constantly looking to interview elsewhere and not really interested in going out and doing the sales, then I as a team head will not be able to generate the sales numbers, because if I have 500 clients under my team base, I may be handling individually as a team head 10, 15, sometimes team heads don't manage any clients. Then my 500 clients will be distributed among my 20 team members. And now if my 20 team members are underperforming and not delivering on bringing in the required business and keeping those 500 clients or their 20, 25 clients happy, then I as a team head am failing. So you have to keep your team members motivated, because your success then is dependent on someone else who's working under your banner and under your blessings. And know what is expected of them, have access to appropriate resources and technologies, and are well trained in the skills required to perform the task. So if I am a team head, I should also know what is it that my team people need to do, what is expected of them and how is it to be done. Otherwise, how will I tell them something is being done wrong and please put it right? I need to know what I am expecting out of my team members. And managers, to create a workforce, increase the probability that they will achieve a high performance result. So managers have a very, very key role to play. If you have a manager, very often you hear about people not quitting jobs but quitting bosses because they are completely sick and tired of their managers. Now, that's a very demotivating style of managing people. Now, a manager because of whom people are quitting right, left and center is not someone who's getting the best result. So his people management skills are very bad. And every time someone quits, you have to hire someone new. There is a cost involved in training this someone new and bringing them up the curve. There is a time span which is lost because of that. There is business which is lost. So who is it affecting adversely? The project result and of course the team manager, who eventually will have to bear the responsibility of a task not done well or not done on time or not given the desired outcome. So to state that successful managers are solely dependent on team performance does not tell the entire story. Today, successful managers are increasingly turning their energies to team building to regain the competitive edge. So while team performance is essential to a team manager's success, if a team manager is proficient and good at his job, then he will not just individually wait for their team performance, but he will also direct his energies towards building that team. Even if he gets a bunch of eclectic, diverse people who are not really operating as a team and not really performing well initially, it is his responsibility to build that team and regain that competitive edge. So that is where his team management skills come, that he was given this bunch of diverse people and he put them together with a common purpose, with a common agenda and got the best out of them by building a very strong team, strong and competitive team. And this is, again, as I said, not limited to large manufacturing organizations. Whether it is small or large organizations, and it has spread to healthcare, government, other related organizations. So team management, as I mentioned in the past, is something which is affecting absolutely every aspect of our life across the globe. It is not something which works better in a profit making unit and not in a not profit making unit. It is not something which works better in a manufacturing industry and doesn't work in a healthcare industry. Wherever there are people involved, wherever there are desired outcomes involved, wherever there are tasks at hand, project management and effective team management come into play. Teams once formed act to focus subordinates' efforts and help to ensure subordinate commitment through employee involvement, creativity and mutual support. So your employee involvement, creativity and mutual support are where the team building strengths of a team manager come into play, where he has to get these individual people to act as part of one single bonded unit with a common agenda. And the team involvement increases employee satisfaction, acceptance of change, and facilitates creative problem solving. This is very, very key, which we will go into a lot more detail. But all these things lead to employee satisfaction and better team performance. So this is very interesting. Performance is equal to ability into effort into support. So ability is individual ability, of course. Effort is individual effort plus team effort, everyone putting in their team effort. Where is the support coming in? Support is coming in from the team manager. If I am a team participant and I am not being able to get another team member to respond and give me the data that I need to finish my task, I need to reach out to my team head, my team manager, who has to give me the support to ensure that I get that support where my data is coming to me on time. If I am a team member who is demoralized because of a personal situation and I'm carrying that personal baggage to work because of which I'm not being able to perform well, then it is my team manager's role to provide me that support and that counseling and a little bit of pat on the back to make me feel enthusiastic and motivated again so that I can leave those personal issues out of the workspace and give my best at work. So this support is very important in this equation because this is a key contribution from the team manager's point of view, without which a team can really, really fall apart and people can feel very directionless. Where do we turn, even if I have the capability and even if I am willing to put in all the hard work? Individual performance is maximized when above performance equation is met. And all of these AES are very important. You cannot take away any. If I have a very supportive team manager, but I'm just lackluster and not putting in the best, I leave work early or I waste a lot of time at work, or if every time I hit a roadblock or a conflict, I don't really think through and try and change it, then it becomes a problem. So each of those AES are very important. It is not that one can work without the other. With the work group, individual performance is enhanced when support comes from two sources, namely manager responsible for the work and from other group members. So, of course, if I have an issue that another group member is not responding to me and giving me the data at the required time, and I reach out to my team manager resolves the conflict and speaks to my team person. My team person has to then give me the data. Just the team manager speaking to my team person and doing his bit is not going to lead to the desired result unless my team participant also appreciates that and is supportive and gives me my required data on time for me to complete my task. So when we say that you bring the team together, it is not just people turning individually to the boss or the team manager all the time. There has to be a rapport between the various team members, because otherwise you will constantly be hitting roadblocks of escalation, of conflict and of deadlocks. Managers who fail to bring together the correct equipment, resources and people cannot expect the team to perform at peak levels. So if I have a project where I require that my 10 team members sitting in 10 different locations have to deliver something collectively by the end of the week, but I as a team project manager have not even ensured that there is any form of communication between these 10 people across these various locations. They are not even being able to speak to each other because there are various stages. One person has to pass on his data and information to the next, because the next person takes it on, starts working on his part of the responsibility. There is a problem or somewhere and another person is looking for a problem resolution, but he really doesn't know who to connect within these 10, or even if he does, there is no proper form of communication in terms of Skyping, emailing, conferencing where this can be resolved. Then I have not given them the proper support system and the infrastructure and equipment. Then even if my individual 10 people are very committed and they are performing at their desired effort and capability level, they are going to fail, because 10 completely disjoint people in a situation and a project where it is required that they communicate with each other is going to lead to failure, and that is the responsibility of the manager. He has to ensure that these channels of communication are kept up and running. And managers who do not coach, encourage and advise are likely to limit the growth and development of their staff. Which is, as I told you, if I am having a problem with another team member who is not giving me my required data on time, and I reach out to my team manager and say, look, I really need this data to come in from this person. Otherwise, I cannot start my piece of the work, and hence I can't deliver to you on time. And the next person who has to start working on it cannot start working on it. And the team manager doesn't really do anything about it, or doesn't counsel me as a team member in terms of maybe finding a way where I can get this data from the other person without reaching out to the team manager every time, because you cannot constantly be reaching out to the team manager. Then if there is a lack of that coaching and advice and encouragement that you're doing a great job, I appreciate you have a problem, we have to resolve the problem. If I'm not playing that role as a team manager, then my team person will feel very demotivated that what's the point of all of my effort when I require something very important, it's not even available, and I'm not even being given any moral support. So I'm really sandwiched here between a delivering team person and a non-interested team manager, and where am I supposed to go with this? So I'm just hung in the middle with wasted effort. So it also leads to a waste of resources if this happens. So managing human resources includes processes that organize, manage and lead team projects, a group of people which has assigned roles and responsibilities for completing the project forms a project team. The type and number of project team members can change as the project progresses. So when our task force was formed, we were a team of 20 people who were pulled in, and we stayed a team of 20 people till the end of the 45 days. But it's very, very possible that at some stage someone may have said, you know, some countries are being missed out, or, you know, work in these countries when we have actually team members who have landed there, we have realized that we need more people here because there's a lot of business here and we're not being able to tap into all the people. So maybe 1 week into that 45 day project, we need to assign another 5 people to this team, to this task force. So yes, you need to estimate a very good number of people at the start. It cannot be completely baseless, but the fact is that the number can be dynamic and can change based on the requirements of the project as it progresses. And while specific roles and responsibilities are assigned, involvement of project team members in project planning and decision making can be beneficial. So when all of us were sent to different countries, while we had responsibilities primarily of mobilizing sales, reaching out to clients, we were also given the authority in the interest of the short time commitment to have direct access to the country heads sitting in the various countries or at the country regional level, so that the decision making and authority in terms of the regulatory requirements, in terms of the documentations, in terms of the terms and conditions could be responded to in a quicker manner rather than constantly being routed through those two people who had been identified as team managers in this task force. So that can be a screened, filtered, calculated authority level to team members can also be beneficial at times. And also early involvement and participation of team members adds their expertise to planning processes and increases their commitment. So if I as a team person feel I was given this responsibility, I went to another country, learned so much, and I was also allowed to take these decisions, come back with suggestions that this is working really well in this country, maybe all of you might want to implement this strategy in your countries as well. And if I receive a positive response, then that is also something that is going to make me feel very motivated and make me feel like, okay, I have the capacity to do much more than my immediate responsibilities. I can grow much more beyond my immediate responsibilities and roles. So it leads to greater commitment, greater motivation, and of course, better growth. It is important for project managers to understand the project team too is a stakeholder in the project. Of course, every member has a stake in the positive desired outcome. So now when this task force achieved the required mobilization amount, there was of course an incentive, a monetary incentive for all the team members who were there. So it may be monetary or it may be in kind, but any positive or negative impact of planning will impact the entire project team and not just any one person. So there are incentives, monetary, non-monetary, motivational, which will impact everyone and not just the bosses. So broadly functions team management would be identify and document the roles and responsibilities required, skills and reporting relationships, and creating a staff management plan and obtaining and confirming the availability of the team necessary to complete the assignment. So when the bank took on this project and this mandate, accepted this mandate to mobilize a certain number of funds from NRIs over a period of 45 days, they would have also assessed before taking on this mandate, do they even have the manpower in terms of number and capability to deliver on this, to hopefully and strongly deliver on this? Because if they don't, if you're a small bank with a one rep office in India with 7 members, and you require 20 people just to service this, and 20 people with good financial knowledge, with good industry knowledge, and you just have a 7-member team, and you take on this big mandate, you're obviously going to fail. So you have bitten off more than you can chew, and it's going to be an embarrassment and a failure for you. So it is important to also know availability of the manpower in terms of number and capability for any team success. So team management also requires influencing the team competency includes tracking of the performance of the team member, providing feedback, resolving issues. So over those 45 days, as I told you, that there were various phases in which the project was being completed, the money was being mobilized, but there was constant feedback coming in from the various countries. This is where we are. This is the roadblock we have hit. This is what we are not going to be able to achieve. This is what we need to be able to achieve this. I need more persons. I need more resources. I need more authority. And at the same time, the team managers would have also been conveying messages to the various people saying, you know what, in this country you have missed out on this segment of investors. We understand that there is this segment, please reach out to them. When you reach out to this segment, you need to adopt this strategy. You need to do this. So there is a constant back and forth. It's not that we were sent off and told, come back and report 45 days later, have you achieved or not. That is a very hands-off way, and if there is something which needs rectification or something where there is a failure about to happen and you are not really taking that into account, then you will actually not be able to rectify it if you look at it on day 45. If there is an issue where there is an NRI who needs some clarification and the team person is not conveying this back to the team bosses, and the team bosses are not coming back with the required clarification during the period of time, you're not going to be able to do anything about it on day 45. If you get this information back by maybe day 30, 35, 40, you may still be able to come back with the required clarification to satisfy the NRI, who may then take a decision that yes, I am willing to go ahead with this. So it is very important to be tracking and monitoring and not just completely switch off. Mind you, monitoring does not mean micromanagement. It doesn't mean standing on the team person's head 24/7 and calling up the team person 5 times or sending emails 10 times during the day, where do you stand, where do you stand, where do you stand. You have to treat team persons as adults, but there has to be a systematic way of maybe every couple of days, every alternate day a reporting back, or every start of the day a report coming in from all the team members across the various countries. There has to be a list of the issues. There has to be a list of the deals in the pipeline. What is the stage? What do we need to get back to the client with? What are the various stages required between this deal in the pipeline and deal being closed? Where is there conflict? Where we need to get back? So there has to be a systematic way of reporting, which is not micromanagement, which is a systematic way which gives enough breathing space, enough autonomy, at the same time keeps a check on things. So that is very important.